From the nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, our program today is on youthful offenders, and it's extraordinarily interesting, a topic that not only resonates within Washington, D.C., but resonates throughout the entire country. We have three guests with us today. We have Lisa Rawlings. She is the Special Assistant to the Director here at my agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. We have Supervisory Community Supervision Officer Rosa Lahr. She is, again, one of the people who have been instrumental in terms of putting together this program. We also have Supervisory Treatment Specialist Sherry Lewis, and to Lisa and to Rosa and to Sherry, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you.
All right. You know, one of the things that the audience needs to understand from the very beginning is that our agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, we've prioritized within the last couple years in terms of two different groups. One, women offenders. Two, high-risk offenders. But now we're going to be talking about youthful offenders. Now we're going to be specializing or taking that idea of high-risk offenders and pushing it over towards youthful offenders. So I find this to be an extraordinarily important topic because people throughout the entire country are wrestling with this. So, Lisa, the first question goes to you. Why create a special supervision team for young adults?
Well, we found that the young adults actually represent just a subset of the high-risk offenders, and so they are at higher risk for reoffending and that they're less compliant with some of the requirements for supervision. And because of some of their unique needs, we also felt that we would need to design supervision that would better respond to these unique characteristics.
Okay. And so they go to Rosa. Who's eligible for the young adult supervision program?
Currently, we're working with a pilot program. So our pilot program consists of general supervision offenders, so those are offenders that were sentenced for a general case. They're not in any of our specialized units.
Right.
Ages 18 to 25.
Right.
And there's a particular reason for that. With young adults, a lot of experts will say and will argue that the frontal lobe, the lobe in the brain that develops and is able to make decisions about what's good and what's bad, is not fully developed until the age of 25. And of course, depending on who you ask, that may fluctuate. But for the most part, for males, it's around 25. Mm-hmm. And so with that in mind, we knew that there was a special need within this population. So right now, our pilot program, there are two teams. One is located in our Northwest Field Unit, and the other one is in our Southeast Field, one of our Southeast Field Units. So those are 25 and under. They are male for right now. They're general supervision, and they're all supervision levels. So you will see intensive all the way to really medium for the most part. There's some scattered minimums, but for the most part, when talking about the young adults, we're talking about the higher intensive and maximum level.
Right. We're talking about the higher risk offenders who are young.
Absolutely.
Okay, fine. All right, Sherry, how will the young adult supervision program differ from the way that we ordinarily supervise people?
Well, one of the things that we've decided to implement with the young adult teams is that we're going to have close collaboration between supervision and the treatment side, as well as the VOTE teams to help these offenders meet their needs. But basically from a strength-based perspective, so we're not going to focus on the deficits, what they're missing, but we're going to work on looking at their strengths and seeing what they need and then addressing those needs based on what they're presenting with and what they have. And so we're meeting them where they are as opposed to just telling them, go here, do this. So they are going to work very closely with each young adult to help them focus on what their goals and what their strengths are.
Okay, and in terms of VOTE, that means the vocational unit and educational unit here at CSOSA, right?
Yes.
Okay, now that we've gotten through these very stiff and formal questions, and in terms of an introduction, the bottom line is this, is that in terms of younger offenders, they're not doing nearly as well within CSOSA and throughout the country from the literature that I've read in terms of older individuals under supervision. And I think that's a concern. Again, this program has just as much relevancy to San Francisco, has just as much relevancy to Nevada as it does to Washington, D.C. So the issue is that younger individuals do not do well on supervision, correct?
Correct. And we'll actually find that because they represent a disproportionately higher percentage of those cases that screen into the highest levels of risk, that they require more resources from the agency. And we're really not seeing the results for all this investment in time and services. And so we're finding that there are a smaller percentage of these cases are closing successfully as compared to the older population.
Right.
And that they're also less compliant and responsive to any of the supervision requirements, as well as some of our treatment and intervention services. So we realized that we're investing a lot and we're not really getting the return on that investment. And so we had to rethink our approach. And this pilot is really a way to test out whether this hypothesized approach is really going to be effective.
Okay, so the bottom line is that we have said, as so many others have said throughout the country, we really have to put more resources, more time, and more effort in terms of that young offender. The first thing we do, however, the public needs to understand is that we have a critical needs and risk analysis to try to figure out where these individuals are in their lives, what their risk is to public safety, and what their needs are to help them successfully complete supervision, right?
Yes. One important thing that I think that we should set kind of in the beginning is the term young offender.
Mm-hmm.
One of the preliminary, I think it was one of our very first work group presentations, the subgroup came up with totally abolishing the label.
Okay.
And it goes back to my previous point about the frontal lobe not being fully developed. And
right.
So these young people, they're really at that stage in their life, we all have been there,
mm-hmm.
Trying to discover who they are. And so one of the things that we recommended early on was, instead of young youthful or young offender,
mm-hmm.
why don't we just call them young adults?
Right.
And so that was one of the recommendations, but it goes deeper into building that rapport.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're able to connect on that human level and really call him or her a young adult, it really does establish a openness and an ability to connect. And one of the biggest researchers in terms of evidence-based practices is that building that rapport is critical
mm-hmm.
for success. And so if we're able to kind of remove the label and meet them and try to connect on that human level, then our probability of being able to address all of the needs are a lot higher.
It's what we call motivational interviewing.
Absolutely.
And it also goes back to a criminological theory that is decades old called labeling theory,
mm-hmm.
That people live up to the label that other people place on them. So that's all. It's very criminological. It's evidence-based in terms of the approach that you're taking. Sherry, talk to me about that breaking through the barrier. A lot of the young individuals, I mean, I've been in the criminal justice system for a long time. I've done jail or job corps kids, where the judge said, go to jail or go to job corps. They were my responsibility. I ran group in a prison system at one time, and I used to be a gang counselor when I was putting myself through college. I've worked with a lot of young offenders. Most of the individuals that I've had contact with really threw up a barrier, really threw up a wall for a lot of different reasons. How do you break through that barrier?
Well, as Rosa mentioned, the rapport is critical. If we can't even sit down and be civil to our clients, we're not going to reach them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're never going to get any information for our screeners, for our assessments, unless we build that rapport.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take our judgments out of it and meet them where they are.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be flexible. We have to understand that for them, a sanction is nothing. They wear GPS like a badge on their leg.
Mm-hmm.
They can do sanction groups standing on their head. They can go back to jail. But we have to be flexible. We have to be able to listen to what they're saying and really build that rapport so that they know what we're doing and they're able to make their decisions based on knowing for a fact what's going to happen.
But the bottom line, and either any of you can take this question, the bottom line, however, in this program is public safety. The bottom line is making sure that that individual, not making sure, to the best of our ability, reducing the amount of recidivism, making our society safer. So that's what we're talking about. I mean, it's not just people would say, oh, well, that motivational interviewing, that's a touchy-feely approach. It's not. It's really practical. It's really the only way that you can break through to individuals, and it's the only way that you can help them cross that bridge.
Right. But within the recommendation, there is a containment model. And so in the containment model, really, there are going to be young adults that are after building that rapport and after really delving into their life and really trying to understand and unlayer all the layers in this onion, because bottom line is when people use drugs, there's an underlying reason.
Okay.
So if you're able to build the rapport and you're able to understand that person in front of you, understand the reason why they use, then the probability of you helping and guiding that person in the right direction grows, obviously. But you know, one of the things that we do have in the recommendation is a containment model, because there, no matter how much rapport you want to build with certain people, they're just not ready. And for those young adults, we will be able to utilize some of our resources like the Reentry Sanction Center, mm-hmm. which is a 28-day assessment program where we're able to take them out of the community for 28 days, do a thorough assessment, which includes a mental health, psychological assessment to determine if maybe there's some underlying mental health needs that are contributing to this person's risk in the community. And so we do have a containment model in the recommendation. It's mm-hmm. not just the touchy-feely. There's also that public safety piece. And one of the very interesting and very different approaches is the role of the supervisor on these pilot programs. Mm-hmm. So currently we do a case review. When we receive a new intake as a supervisor, I review the case. And based on the person's history, I give instructions, very specific instructions to that CSO, to the officer.
Right.
In this role, in the pilot program, that supervisor will also be doing an initial case review that will be called a stabilization plan.
Okay.
So, you know, we can talk about public safety, but if someone's hungry, I mean, the basic needs have to be met. And
right.
so it gives, in the very beginning of this assignment, it gives that SCSO kind of the ability to flag these very urgent needs to ensure public safety.
Okay, and CSO, most people around the country call what we call CSOs, community supervision officers, parole and probation agents, so I just wanted to bring that clarity. If an individual, Lisa, comes out of, let's just say they come out of the prison system, if they come out with a mental health need, that if that mental health need's not addressed, then the probability of that person going back to the criminal justice system rises significantly. I mean, there are issues here that need to be dealt with. Resources need to be applied, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And we also recognize that there's no parole and probation agency in the country that has all the resources it needs. So we have to prioritize, correct? Okay. And that's one, that's why I opened up the program with the fact that that we have recently reorganized around women offenders, around high-risk individuals, and now young adults. And that seems to be the natural continuum of placing the resources where they have the greatest need. Sherry, do you want to play with that?
Yes, and that's part of what I was saying about the close collaboration, why a treatment specialist is assigned to the teams so that assessments can be done. Most of our treatment specialists have some substance abuse, if not mental health background,
mm-hmm.
so that they can do brief assessments. They can do a clinical interview with the client to say, okay, maybe this client might need to go to the RSC to get a mental health evaluation. Maybe this client is toxic, so they need to detox immediately before we start working with the client. Because if we don't address those needs in the beginning, we're going to wind up with seeing them either revoked or back in the system or a public safety.
And we risk. Address these needs not necessarily just through CSOSA. Available goods and services through CSOSA. We also engage in partnerships with other agencies. We also use our faith-based program. We use a variety of modalities to try to get that give that individual the tools that he or she needs to become taxpayers rather than tax burdens to cross that bridge, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And Lynn, if I could just go back to the touchy-feely comment a few minutes ago, because I want to dispel the myth that really starting where the individual is and seeing them as a person first with
right.
needs and drives and desires
mm-hmm.
is a touchy-feely approach, because that's really going to drive their behavior, whether it be offending or otherwise. And so all of the staff who will be working with this group have been selected for their sensitivity to this population,
right.
for their experience in working with this group and their interest.
Mm-hmm.
and desire to really work with young people. But also they've been trained on a model called the Good Lives Model, which really kind of embraces this approach to
right.
understand that we all have aspirations, we all have needs, and that our behavior maybe ways of getting those needs met, and it helps us to better understand what those needs are and to find other ways that might be more appropriate or more effective at actually meeting those needs. And so, in essence, this approach, rather than kind of just being touchy-feely, allows us to really meet the person where they are, understand their needs, and to help them be more effective at achieving their own goals.
Well, I totally buy into it, because when I did the Jail or Job Corps kids, that's exactly what I had to do. You had to approach that person as an individual, regardless of what, how they acted out, what they did, the problems that they were getting into. I had to connect with that person as an individual. It was eyeball to eyeball. It was somehow, some way finding a connection with that individual that that person would open up to me so I could begin to help that person. So it's one of the things that people need to understand.
Absolutely.
Is that we need to establish that relationship with that individual. I simply know from my own experience is that it's a lot harder than what a lot of people make it out to be. Sherry, you're smiling.
And I would just say that that's why we were really careful about who we wanted to be involved in this.
Absolutely.
Because it is really tough work. And that we're really excited about the teams that we've amassed so far, that people have expressed a lot of interest and really shown a lot of dedication to this work.
Okay, we're halfway through the program. I want to reintroduce everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're doing a show on youthful offenders. Lisa Rawlings is the special assistant to the director. We have Supervisory Community Supervision Officer Rosa Lahr, and we have Supervisory Treatment Specialist Sherry Lewis. The website for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency is www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. As always, we welcome your comments. Okay, so we've established the fact that there has to be a need. We've established the fact that there has to be prioritized resources. We've established the need, the fact that prioritized resources have to go to offenders who pose the highest risk. And we have established the issue that we as human beings need to reach some pretty tough individuals for that change process to take place. Sherry, where do we go to from there? So we collaborate with lots of other organizations in terms of providing either substance abuse or mental health services, or we provide them ourselves, educational, vocational services. Rosa, you talk about a containment model. We have all sorts of ways of intervening in their lives, either through a global positioning system tracking or reporting or a 28-day assessment in terms of residential assessment. There's all sorts of things that we have at our disposal. But unless we can break through those barriers that these individuals present, we're just not going to be successful. So what is the principal model of breaking through?
I would say, and I always, when I'm coaching my staff, I always approach it this way. You are where you are for a reason in life, okay? And if you had a carrot, so once we're able to build that rapport with the young adult and find out, more importantly, not only identify the problems, but also identify his or her drive. So once you realize and once you're able and that person trusts you enough to share with you what their carrot is, use that to your advantage in guiding the behavior. So for example, I'll give you an example of a young adult most recently on my team. His biggest, and this was something that I was able to get out of him on day one by just having a very casual conversation about, so why are you here? And, you know, and so one of the things that was very important to him was his mother's love and acceptance. And this case brought shame to his mother. Mm. And that was what he said, that if there was one thing that he could do to, and you know, if there was one thing that he could do, it would be to make his mother proud. So as a supervisor, getting that information day one, I was able to have a one-on-one conversation with that CSO who would be then supervising that young adult to say, whenever he falls off track or whenever he's kind of, you don't know what's really going on, say, how do you think your mom will feel about this behavior?
And, you know, in terms of all the criminological theories and all the things that we've just discussed for the last 15 minutes, I think that example that you gave really does drive home the important parts of the program. all the programs that I just mentioned, whether it be high-risk offenders or women offenders, we have community supervision officers, again, known elsewhere as parole and probation agents, who volunteer for these programs, who volunteer to be trained in terms of that particular modality, people who are sensitive to women's issues, because women offenders need to be dealt with differently from male offenders. I think we all agree on that.
Yes.
And I think anybody listening to this program would agree on that. So why would it be any different for young offenders? We have to be trained. We have to be sensitized. We have to have a modality that works for that particular population, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the whole idea. We have, how many teams are we talking about?
Right now, our private lit program consists of two teams, Upper Northwest and Southeast quadrants of D.C.
Okay. And how many, what's the ratio of community supervision officers? According to the research that you've given me, it's about 35 to 1.
Correct.
Okay. So that is astounding, because the average parole and probation caseload in this country is minimum 100 to 150 to 1. I've seen jurisdictions throughout the country where that ratio is much higher. We, on average, here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, have a 50 to 1 caseload. You're talking about a 35 to 1 caseload. That's phenomenal. So that'll give the community supervision officer the time and space to deal meaningfully with the individuals on that caseload, right?
Correct. And that 35 to 1 is the ceiling, that it shouldn't exceed that, but it may fluctuate as we, you know, again, launch the pilot and as it is being implemented. But the thought really is to be able to have more quality interaction, to not just be able to count the number of face-to-face visits, but to really to be able to allow the officer an opportunity to really develop the rapport.
Right.
And to be able to collaborate with their team members who are from other disciplines, the treatment specialists and the vocational specialists, to really understand who this person is, what are their needs, and how can they be supportive of them in this process.
Because that community supervision officer is not on their own. You've mentioned it a little while ago. It's mm-hmm. a team approach. So there's a treatment specialist involved in this. There are supervisors involved in this. There's people from the faith community who are involved in this. If there's somebody on the outside that's providing mental health counseling, they're involved in this. So it's a team approach to
Absolutely.
Each and every individual under supervision, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's astounding.
Yes. One of the other things that we've been doing is we've also know that some of these young men are also involved in other systems. So some of them may be also dually involved in the juvenile system as well as with CSOSA, or some of them may also be in the child welfare system and also involved in CSOSA, since in D.C. they can stay in child welfare up until 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to make sure that we're communicating with these other social workers or other officers so that they're not being overly committed, that they don't have to report, you know, they don't have an agenda that's overly packed and that it's impossible for them to meet the requirements of any one of the any one of these agencies. So really that collaboration within the team and across agencies in the city is really going to be important to the success of this initiative.
And that's what's worked so well with the women offenders. I mean, the idea of going to one place and getting services across the board in terms of one place, in terms of the group setting. We do a lot of groups for our women offenders, and that seems to be powerful. I mean, I've had dozens in the 10 years of being with CSOSA, women under supervision before these microphones, and they tell me about the power of coming in and having everybody, the team there, dealing with them at one time. So I would imagine that's the same power that we're trying to bring to young adults.
Yeah, and one of the earlier themes of the work group, and I think it's made it all the way up to the pilot, and it's something that we've discussed with all of the wonderful officers and supervisors who have taken on this task, is that it really comes down to it takes a village. It takes a village, and our village consists of in-house partners, the supervision side, the treatment side, you know, DYRS, which is our youth rehabilitation program, the child welfare system. So it really does take a village, because when it comes to these young adults, it's really, like I said earlier, many layers. And so, you know, there may be a time where they were very open with their DYRS, their juvenile probation officer, and they have information that we may not have,
right,
and vice versa. So having kind of those open lines of communication is in the best benefit of the young adult.
You know, I apologize for the contrast going back and forth between women offenders, but I love our women offenders program. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And I've loved interviewing people who have both graduated from our program and currently under supervision before these microphones, and to hear their enthusiasm that, thank God, somebody finally listened to me. But when you sit there with them, it's like they come out with mental health problems, substance abuse problems. They have children. 80% of the people, women that we have under supervision have children. They're indigent. They come out and they may have burned their bridges with a family. There's a certain point where you sit back and go, well, how many cards in this deck are stacked against this woman in terms of being successful? That's why I love talking to the women who have been successful before these microphones. Isn't that sort of the same way with young adults? They come to us with a wide variety of problems. Most are coming from single family, single parent households. Most are coming from histories of substance abuse. I'm not quite sure of the percentage who have mental health problems, but I would assume that it's fairly high. So we're talking about individuals with real challenges.
Yeah, one of the things that we did was a focus group, because we, you know, exactly along the lines of what you're talking about, Len, we wanted to know, not only because as practitioners, you know, we kind of bring a collective experience based on the practitioner's experience. However, we wanted to hear from the young adults. And one of the things that we did in preparation during the work group was having a focus group. So mm-hmm. we held three focus groups in two different quadrants of the city, and really asked those questions to the young adults mm-hmm. to ensure that this pilot program really addressed their needs. Mm-hmm. And some of the overarching needs were the importance of their interaction with the CSO, which goes hand in hand with what the evidence tells us is very important to establishing that rapport
right.
Very early on.
Right.
Another overarching concern or you know, item that came out during the focus group was their needs, mm-hmm. their needs from housing stability to substance abuse to something as simple, and some people may think it's simple, but for them it's a real deal, transportation challenges. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that the program has is the opportunity to provide tokens for people that are compliant. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, we did that in a very human way by bringing them in and asking them, what is it going to take for you to succeed? And so we had a lot of input, and those were recommendations that were actually implemented into the pilot recommendation.
We have 4 minutes left. What am I missing here?
Well, one other thing I would just add into that is that though they do come with many challenges, there's a great opportunity here, because many of these young people are somewhat early in their criminal career, and if we can really divert that and abort that at this point, it really can save, it can just cut that trajectory off. And so we see that their crimes are, you know, less violent than their older problems. They do have lower mental health needs. But we really have a great opportunity here to really intervene before their criminality escalates. And that's something that we're really excited about being able to do with this initiative.
And the research is very clear. 15 to 25 is the most criminogenic age group. So if we can intervene here, if we can successfully reach these individuals at these younger stages, we can save literally hundreds, if not thousands, of crimes over time being committed. That's the bottom line behind what we're talking about, correct?
Right. And all of our participants who are actually on these teams, the treatment specialists, the CSOs, the vocational staff, they're all trained in CBI, cognitive behavioral intervention. They're dealing with the thinking that is behind some of the behaviors that cause our young adults to reoffend or to engage in behaviors that are not engaging them in pro-social or positive behavior.
And cognitive behavioral therapy, for the person who doesn't recognize the term, means what? Thinking for a change? Helping that person make better decisions through life.
Yes.
Okay. And a lot of people don't understand that when I say that in terms of the need for cognitive behavioral therapy. It's one of the most successful modalities we have in terms of community corrections per the research. But a lot of people just don't understand how the training and the upbringing that many of us received from our parents may not have taken place in the life of that younger individual, and that person needs to be cognitively restructured from the very beginning, right?
Right. And it makes for a more meaningful interaction with the young adult, so that in the beginning you might spend more time, mm-hmm. but in the back end you're going to spend less time, because if they're actually getting the information, you won't need to meet with them as frequently or as often or for as the same length of time.
And it shortens the time frame of breaking through the barrier. It shortens, yes. I mean, I've said that some people come to us with chips on their shoulders the size of Montana. And breaking through that barrier becomes an art to itself. But sooner you can do that, the better the intervention and the more effective the intervention is going to be, right?
Absolutely. And we want to get away from just supervising the case and the charges, but also supervising the individual so that they are not only successful in their outcomes, but they're also will have better tools to be able to make better decisions down the road.
Lisa, you have the final word, ladies and gentlemen. With us is DC Public Safety. We've done a show today on youthful offenders. Our guest today has been Lisa Rawlings. She's the special assistant to the director, supervisory community supervision officer, Rosa Lahr, and supervisory treatment specialist, Stephanie Lewis. I thank all three of you, ladies and gentlemen. Again, this is DC Public Safety. We really do appreciate all the comments that you provide, and we even appreciate the criticisms, and please have yourself a very, very pleasant day.